Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Rewind the dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Yes, it is John Pollock and Wei Ting. We are about to get into Dynamite, Wei and I just did our we did our opening set of heavy lifting. And what did we chat about, Wei? For 30 minutes.
Well, a lot about the Masha Slamovich story, which seems to, you know, be the biggest story of the day. We spoke a little bit about John Cena versus AJ Styles being announced for Crown Jewel and the very unique way that WWE has managed to build up to that one without Cena being on TV, relying solely on his social media. You talked a little bit about the N1 Victory Tournament and the winner, the beautiful people being added to the TNA Hall of Fame, and a lot about NXT and this current TNA Invasion storyline that they're trying to build up. Also, a little bit about AEW's Tailgate Brawl returning ahead of WrestleDream.
Yes, and we are going to be back later this week as well. Want to make mention that Friday night, Wei will be with Neil Flanagan for Rewind to SmackDown. I'm going to be doing a show covering Victory Road that will be dropping for cafe members on Saturday. And then we have a Collision Course with Kate from Montreal and John Clinchester Saturday night, and a New Japan Destruction in Kobe review coming your way Sunday on the cafe from Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson. It is another busy weekend in the world of professional wrestling, and we will have you all covered in the coming days. Postwrestlingcafe.com, where you get the XL edition of Rewind to Dynamite with all of the news off the top, and then the feedback and Q&A portion at the end.
All right.
And maybe some AJ Styles spokesman ads.
And throw in a little bit of Jimmy Kimmel talk in there as well.
It's all part of the XL edition, the stuff that just can't fit into this portion of the show. Mm-hmm. Are you ready to go, Wei? Or were you ready for Dynamite tonight?
I'm ready.
Well, were they ready in Pittsburgh? That was the question. The Peterson Event Center. And let's just say it's petered out a little since the last time they were here at this venue. Last year, they were here for the fifth anniversary of Dynamite and drew 4,600 people. Tonight, WrestleTix reporting 2,670.
Mm.
Might have been the Britt Baker extended family that took this week's show off.
No Britt Baker on the show.
No. I mean, I can't say anyone was maybe surprised by that, but to me, it was, if this show comes and goes without a Britt Baker anything, kind of tells you, like, there's no immediate plan for any kind of appearance, it would seem.
It would
and begs
you
the question of, like, what the ultimate outcome is here with Britt Baker, who has not been seen for months and months. So tonight, Hangman Page is backstage, and so we got a slew of announcements today, and like, as of this morning, we knew we were getting the Chris Statlander, Mina Shirakawa title match and the Tony Khan big announcement. And by tonight, if you were following Tony Khan's X, it had grown to three title matches on this show, including an open challenge where Hangman Page will defend the title against Lee Moriarty, who is from Pittsburgh. And that's how we start off the show, with Hangman addressing Kyle Fletcher, stating he was taken to the limit and he wants to see what Kyle does with this moment in the months and years to come, and will face Moriarty tonight. So that was our proclamation by Hangman. Brodito against GOA for the AEW tag titles. Ricochet does they do an inset promo about how they put the Hurt Syndicate down on Saturday. And because Shibata is not cleared, they're putting a pause on going for the Trios belts. And that was our only mention of Shibata here, but he was not present for any of the op stuff later in the show. And the fact that this was brought up makes you think that it's not just Shibata's not just gone for tonight. It would seem like he's might be an indefinite issue that he's dealing with.
Yeah, and when you're talking about Shibata, obviously you're going to be a lot more, you know, suspicious and also concerned about his health. So we await to see if we learn any more about that.
Ricochet is on commentary, and they overpowered Bandido. So during the match, like, the crowd, it was kind of like up and down. But when they would do these hot tags with Brodito, it was like the crowd exploded when they would make these tags. So it was like, this team is certainly, I think, really connected with people, and they've got something great going with these two. But Bandido gets in, loud response. He does the Macarena in the corner, and then press slams Khan in the air onto Toa, who is seated in the corner. They would double team Bandido as King returns. It's like a double electric chair, and then King gets slammed into the timekeeper's area, and Ricochet grabs a chair, leaves commentary, and comes into the ring, where Aubrey stops him, ejects him, and GOA hit their finisher. Brody's in for the save, and we get a tope suicida from Brody to the floor as Bandido executes the 21-plex and pins Khan in 14 minutes and 54 seconds, retaining the titles.
Yeah, really cool finish here with that combo tope suicida and 21-plex. I thought a good little showcase for both teams, and it's one that continues to cement this run of Brodito's, establishing their dominance in the division. I'm not sure if the plan was to always put the belts on them after that tournament, or if it was supposed to go to FTR, but I'm really happy to see them go all in on this team, because right now they're on fire, and it's really working out. They've finally found a way to give Brody King, you know, the biggest push of his career, and Brodito, of course, as well. Sorry, Bandido. I'm going to call him Brodito. The gates continue to look very good. So I still await to, you know, see them show a bit more personality as part of this Ricochet team. Right now, they're really just kind of playing the heavies without doing much talking. So I'm curious to see if they can evolve in that department as well.
Alicia Toot is with the Conglomeration. Briscoe wants the big guns from the Don Callis family. And when he is asked about who the partner is, who is it? Is it Rob Van Dam? He says, mystery is the word of the day, no matter how hard you try to peel or squeeze that info out of me. Because today I woke up and I told myself, Mark, orange, you glad that you have so many conglomerators to choose from. And the future looks so bright, I'm putting my shades on. And at the end, Kyle goes to Alicia. Thank you, Jane. Ugh, Alicia, where is my mind?
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't believe the reveal to come. Renee is with Chris Statlander and Harley Cameron. Chris is beat up.
There's also a little promo for Klon that they aired here.
Oh,
well.
I'm sorry. I missed that. So he's still coming. He's on his way.
I think sooner than later.
Maybe next week?
Well, yeah. I would think next week.
Renee is with Statlander and Harley, and Chris is asked about her association with the Death Riders, and she says that things can move really fast when you make decisions. And that was all. A very stern look by Chris Statlander towards Renee.
Yeah, it was a lot of Harley Cameron here, I would say, being overly obnoxious. And this, I think, was clearly meant to be some sort of tease, because Statlander didn't look all too pleased about being interrupted by Harley Cameron. And then after Harley kind of continued to be very obnoxious, you certainly got the sense that they were teasing the turn, which would play into the closing angle.
Maybe she was planning to join the Death Riders, but she got annoyed by Renee's line of questioning here. And that was the tipping point, not Harley.
Must have been. Yes, sure.
Hangman Page, Lee Moriarty for the AEW Championship. They put over Lee Moriarty. They have a video here as the longest reigning ROH Pure Champion. And they mention, Excalibur mentions that, Danielson, you've been in the Border City stretch before, not by Lee Moriarty, but you've been in that move. And then Danielson just subtly mentions that he has been in the Border City stretch by Lee Moriarty. And Excalibur says, so you faced Hechicero and you faced Lee Moriarty, we see.
See, and I would expect Don Callis to maybe forget one of Danielson's matches. I would not expect Excalibur to forget one of Danielson's matches.
Do you know how many matches this guy has called in the last 6 years?
I do, but he also is an encyclopedia of professional wrestling.
He had a slip here, but Danielson didn't jump all over him. Paige eats a springboard.
What does that say about Danielson's run, that his matches are so memorable to even the people that work there?
Well, he was, Danielson did cite some of Lee Moriarty's matches. I could guarantee you Danielson is probably watching Ring of Honor every week. So Paige, after taking the springboard, hits a fallaway slam, DVD. The Deadeye gets countered as Lee goes into an octopus hold, then to a roll-up and into the Border City stretch. I really enjoyed this sequence. Danielson calls this could be the biggest upset in AEW history, but Paige manages to escape the hold, hits the lariat and a Deadeye to win in 9:55. Taz really puts over Moriarty afterward. And I like the fact that this was a little different than the formula that the guy that's going to be losing here will give him like a bunch of big near falls before he falls. Instead, it was just this sequence and he nearly got his finisher and Paige had an answer and boom, he just gets caught at the end with the Deadeye. And it was just like this nice flowing sequence into the finish.
It was relatively straightforward. And like with these open challenge gimmicks, like we're seeing Sami Zayn currently do, that we saw obviously Cena do, we saw Cody do with the TNT Championship. I mean, I feel like it's pretty obvious that the goal is to shine a light on, you know, your sort of underrated and underappreciated members of the roster. They did that really well with the video package ahead of this too, just as a continued sort of introduction or reintroduction to people to Moriarty. But I do think like the match needs to make an impression as well. And I would say, I don't know if this one really did, you know, I think at the very least you want somebody to remember some sort of possibility that we might get some sort
this
of
this man
upset.
Has put Hangman Page and Brian Danielson in the Border City stretch.
That's well, follow up is everything, and we'll see if we get a promo from him, maybe, you know, claiming that. But I also agree that, like, it's clear they didn't structure the match to give you that, like, big false finish, right? It was a relatively straightforward match without any big near fall. And I almost think that was also intentional because I think this is, you know, the start of a longer term story for Paige where I can imagine, would continue to sell this neck injury, much in the way that, like, an Orange Cassidy did through that international title run. And maybe it'll get to the point where the neck bothers him so much that, you know, an MJF might see an opportunity to finally cash in, even
the
with
Martinette.
The week's notice.
Yes, that will be Paige's downfall, his worsening neck. All started by Lee Moriarty, who can lay claim to doing the greatest amount of damage.
Yes, yes.
So remember this match.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we're going back to November of 1995 as Rewind Away takes a look at the Survivor Series featuring Diesel defending the WWF Championship against Bret Hart. We'll also have weekly editions of Collision Course with the carousel of co-hosts joining Kate from Montreal, reviews of TNA Victory Road, New Japan's Destruction in Kobe, and it is the Ask Away Mailbag Show as John and Way answer your questions all this month at postwrestlingcafe.com. Shivani brings out, first we go to Adam Copeland. This was after All Out, and he storms past Renee into the locker room with Christian, and he just says to Christian, I can't keep doing this to my family. I'm going to go home, and I don't know if I'm going to come back. And Cage says, I don't have a family anymore, so go take care of yours. And Copeland looks at him, you always have a family. And he put out his arm and shook his hand.
He did, yeah. I I enjoyed this. I thought like Adam Copeland's Emmy
I was waiting
award,
for Wendell Clark to walk in. Hey,
I'm still here.
I want to go out for some drinks.
Yeah, maybe I'll team with Bob. What is it? The Green Bastard now. I thought Cope was great, and I think that Emmy Award nominated acting ability shone through here, John. He was able to look confused and also a little bit panicked without having to like scream or exaggerate to show it. I also like the fact that he referenced prior Beth attacks, like the one with Orton that I was thinking about. So I thought it made that attack on Saturday feel
maybe
less
that
like
should have been Christian's response. Like, listen, she's taken worse than this.
Yeah. Yeah. Are we sure Christian didn't do one of these in the past? You know, so anyway, it makes that angle on Saturday feel less like a retread and more of an accumulation that, you know, at least Copeland is able to recognize here.
Yeah. I understand like the story they're telling here, but like this was specifically like right after the show. And during that post-match, like what was the visual? It was Beth and Christian, like completely like laid out. And we go back. It's like, Christian's fine. Like there's no injury here. He's not selling anything. He's got ice. He's like, I tweaked my trapezoid here.
I suppose this is where we have to point towards some sort of.
And Copeland took the same move. And this guy's like, you know, he could probably do a handstand right now.
Yeah. With Beth Phoenix, it really doesn't work because we've seen her be not just an active wrestler, but a very dominant active wrestler who's able to wrestle men. But there's obviously some sort of like, you know, difference between the sexes that they are using towards their advantage. With Beth, it doesn't really work as well. They probably should have needed like use thumbtacks or something to really injure her.
Well, unfortunately, they got to the arena late and they couldn't claim the tax from, the other match. So
Shivani, Cope's gone. He's just like, obviously
he's gone again. Yeah. He's gone again.
On a part-time schedule. And you know what? At this point, we take what we can get out of his career.
Maybe he's going to just wait till the NHL season begins. And then once the Leafs like drop their first like six games, then he'll be like, okay, time to go back to work.
Perhaps. Yeah. This is going to be like a 5-year feud with Copeland and FTR by the time we're done, I think.
Well, it's long-term booking. Shivani brought out FTR. I really enjoyed this segment. FTR comes out with Big Stoke. And Shivani, think about what this man has been privy to. Think of what we just watched on Saturday alone, okay? We saw a man lit on fire, but who made a miraculous recovery tonight, by the way. I mean, for some of the death-defying stuff we saw on Saturday, some amazing recuperative abilities.
Well, Tony,
the guy Moxley didn't even have a goddamn burn mark. He didn't have a bandage. We saw this guy lit on fucking fire. What was the purpose of that match, of that angle?
Well, that's a great question. One that we should attempt to answer a bit later on. But in this particular scenario, I mean, at least they have the excuse of telling us that like Tony Schiavone is not necessarily one to be the most, I suppose, trusted when it comes to, statements like this and, not making hyperbole out of most things.
Yes. Well, he says that FTR attacking Beth was the worst thing he's ever seen in an AEW ring. The worst, which I guess that would exclude backstage attacks and lighting men on fire.
There's even been way worse.
I know. I'm trying here. Okay. Cash says their actions have kept Cash up at night. All we wanted to do was end Copeland and Christian and focus on going for the tag titles, but Copeland couldn't stand that. He brought his wife into this. I blame Adam. Stoke then says, Beth, I forgive you for what you did to me. All I did was run up the ramp to introduce myself to you, and you took it upon yourself to spear me, which didn't hurt, by the way. I was just about to get up. I allowed a woman to spear me and said that Copeland and Cage needed Beth to win that match. And finally, Dax, I will not apologize for dropping Copeland on that neck. Cage on his CTE riddled brain and said he would never purposely injure Beth. So what happened on Saturday? She punched me in my broken nose, causing my eyes to water, and I thought that Adam was attacking me because, you know, I would never put my hands on a woman.
Hilarious.
I don't know if I've told the story before, but I had a grade 10 history of something or other subject that I was taking in high school. And the teacher told us once about how he fought he ran a red light and he fought the ticket. And so he went to court and his defense was, have you ever sneezed and been able to see what is in front of you? He explained, when you sneeze, your eyes naturally close. And that is what happened. I sneezed as I was going towards the intersection and I couldn't see the light turning. It was a great story. He got denied, but that was his defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, that was Dax's defense here.
Right.
His eyes are watering here.
So whose side were you on?
I thought it was a clever story, but I mean, it didn't get him out of the parking ticket. So,
yeah.
Or the red light.
Mm, okay.
Did you like this segment? Maybe not.
This segment?
Okay.
Like,
yes.
Are you talking about your story or
no? Dax? I'm talking about the FTR segment now.
I like the FTR promo a lot. Yeah. I liked your story too.
No, you didn't. I derailed this discussion and you were just waiting for me to get back.
I guess
on track.
I was just waiting for your, like,
I just thought it was a funny story.
I didn't have much to react to, you know. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't give a lot. I could have done better. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Great. The FTR thing was I thought great. You know, all of them were very entertaining with their excuses, and I thought Dax was the best of the bunch here.
So, are they just going to wait for Copeland to end this this vacation?
Seems like it.
Maybe mm-hmm. they'll go for the tag titles in the meantime.
Well, they're not on people that they can't beat now, so yeah.
I mean, you could get the belts onto FTR by the time Copeland and Christian are ready to come back mm-hmm. and go for these belts. And they mm-hmm. I mean, it could make sense that, you know, Copeland and Christian now have a win against FTR, and if you get FTR to up to the titles, you could do them chasing the titles again, like we thought we were gonna get in Toronto. Mm-hmm. So of all people, Willow Nightingale interrupts and calls Beth Copeland, don't call her Phoenix, an inspiration. Is the reason why Willow became a wrestler? Is the reason why she came back from a broken neck and
not her specifically, but people like her.
People like her became a wrestler.
So, I mean,
wouldn't that include her?
Yeah, but like to say she influenced her would mean she and she only influenced her. This to me was like Willow saying, you know, Beth, like Willow really has zero connection to Beth Phoenix. And I think this was their way of like trying to stretch it so that we could feel some sort of connection between the two.
Okay. Well, she said that women like Beth are the reason women like her don't take shit from men like you, and tells FTR to either give a sincere apology or get out of the ring. And she slaps Stokely as Jet Speed appear out of nowhere at Jet Speed, and they send FTR out of the ring, and they grab Stoke, and FTR departs. So yeah. It looks like Jet Speed will be surrogates here for Christian and Cage.
Yeah, seems like it. I mean, really, like I understand.
What a weird combo here we got.
I mean, throw Jet Speed into really any situation, right? Like they're just sort of that team that just kind of plugs in the holes. But it's like they're having to work with whatever Copeland's schedule is, and it kind of makes things awkward to try to continue a story with like three people that really have nothing to do with Cage and Copeland. Like you would think it would be Christian teaming with somebody else going up against FTR, but they're doing something else. Like they're not like what is Christian going to do? I guess is my big question. Wouldn't he want revenge against FTR?
I think he's going to start a family.
Perhaps, yeah. But to have Willow come out here. I mean, I thought it was fine, but, you know, hardly, I think, that impactful because we've seen zero connection between Willow and Copeland, you know, prior, unless I'm mistaken. I just nothing really recognizable. But it's a way to, I guess, fill FTR's time. I wonder if they'll actually do an intergender match with Stokely and Willow on opposing sides with FTR and Jet Speed. I mean, like a trio.
Yeah, they could. It's possible. That's why they got to set something up out of this.
Yeah, yeah.
MJF is shown after the pay-per-view with all of the tax still embedded in his body. And he is so angry, but he can't yell. It's like, I've been in two countries over the course of 17 hours. I'm 0-2, and there was a lot of blood in both matches. He says, I used to be the guy here, and then Adam Cole came into my life, and he broke my heart. And then I lost my title and my mojo. Something is missing, and I'm not MJF. I've become a caricature of myself, and I have created doubt. These are not tacks. They are doubts. And I have been passed by Ospreay, by Hangman. Now I'm sitting in their dust. And I'm only going to return when I'm at my most dangerous. And he takes a tack and chews on it and spits out the tack, representing doubt that he's going to spit out. And he's going to come back better than ever my way. So it looks like a... It's like a bunch of guys filled out their vacation forms, and MJF is going to get his long-awaited honeymoon.
Well, I mean, this guy has a legitimate excuse with, you know, taking time off for his wedding, right? The thing is, I thought this was a great promo. It's, you know, it could have been a very simple promo just to kind of excuse that honeymoon absence, but, like, he put a lot of effort, as he does in everything he does, you know, clearly. And I think using the tax as the symbolic of his doubt, doing the whole chewing up and spitting out thing, and then the walking away visual showing the tax on his back, I thought it was all brilliant. You know, he's to be held at a very high standard, because this is like an average MJF promo, but his average is a lot of people's best promo. So he did great here. But it just feels to me a little bit like a retread, like this, a similar style of promo we saw him cut after the Hangman Page loss. So, you know, you can, another great promo, but it's, you can only do these so often. You know, he's now had to kind of make excuses for two losses on pay-per-views at the same time. And I have to imagine he's due for many big wins, maybe the big win, you know, immediately when he returns.
If they had not changed the stipulation on the contract, you would think this guy's going to disappear and his return is going to be winning that title out of nowhere with the contract.
Perhaps if it's the open challenge.
Well, you can't do it anymore. They've established you've got to do the week's notice.
Right, right. Yeah, sure. But I mean, with Paige with a worsening neck, I think even having a week's notice would be like a good way for him to still take advantage of an opportunity and feeling confident about it. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Then we go to Okada, Takeshita, and Hechicero against Mark Briscoe, Hologram, and the returning Orange Cassidy, who is revealed when Don Callis is about to show off his new painting. And then when it's revealed, the painting has been destroyed and Orange Cassidy is standing there as the Pixies play. Rocky Romero ran up the ramp and Orange Cassidy sidestepped with plenty of time and just crashed through the frame of this painting.
This whole thing was completely ridiculous. Like, number one, how did the painting suddenly turn into like a box that could fit a human? And number two, Rocky was so, like, they mistimed that dive so badly that it looked awful. But the whole thing is ridiculous, and I don't know if we're necessarily meant to be thinking about it as hard. I like this Orange Cassidy's new Titantron being a media offline logo from whatever editing software they're using, I think Premiere. It's hilarious and almost feels like something, you know, also fitting of the Bucks gimmick, of course.
Yeah, this looks like my backup laptop. On most days. So Cassidy comes out, good response to him. This is his first match since March. And then Briscoe and Hologram land dives and Cassidy does his leap off the top, just dead weight to the floor. Hologram and Hechicero were so great to watch in this match. Like everything they did together, it was, I thought they were the highlights for me of the match, seeing them together. Hologram hit all of these big spinning head scissors, both to Takeshita, and then he lands on his feet from a German by Okada to finally make the hot tag to Mark Briscoe. when Cassidy comes in, he hugs Okada as they cite their history in chaos. And then they proceed to get into it. There's a stun dog on Okada. Takeshita hands off Cassidy into a belly-to-back suplex by Okada. So they're working together. And then Okada and Takeshita are left alone in the ring when Cassidy appears and does the limp kicks and a double Rana to the two. Rainmaker to Briscoe is countered, and then Takeshita rolls with Hologram into the Bastard Driver, but when he tries to segue into the Wheelbarrow, it's turned into a Destroyer, and Hologram hits that. Orange Punch to Hechicero, and then Hologram wins with the Portal Bomb, pinning Hechicero in 10 minutes and 37 seconds in your fun AEW Trios match. But I really felt like Hologram was, I think, by design, like the real standout of this match because of what they're setting him up for. And man, him and Hechicero, I just thought had tremendous interaction whenever they were involved.
I agree. I thought that was the pairing that stood out to me in the match as well. I thought it was a good match, but I don't think it was necessarily at the level of like your bigger or like better Dynamite multi-person matches, but still very good. And as a reintroduction to Orange Cassidy, I thought it was perfectly fine. Although I am certainly eager to see if there's any sort of evolution in him or in his character at this point. Because, you know, it's always great to have Orange Cassidy back, but I think there's still something that could be done to really try to get him to a higher level. And I'm curious to know what that might be.
Maybe he could have done a promo that I become a caricature of myself. This isn't denim. These are doubts.
And he starts eating it.
Yeah, and then he spits out his sunglasses. Kyle Fletcher walks out. He has never felt so defeated or crushed after Saturday, but remembered who he is, and I'm on track to becoming the greatest TNT champion ever. And he refers to the babyfaces in the ring as dogs. And Hologram has the longest undefeated streak in AEW history, 34-0, or should I say 34 and never faced Kyle Fletcher.
Wait a second. What was Jade's record? Wasn't she at like 50 and something?
I don't know what her number was. Yeah, I feel that was above 34, but someone can check that. So Kyle might have to...
She ended with 60-2, so yeah.
Okay. But we don't know when the streak ended.
I'm sure it was well past 34, because I feel like she only lost like her last few matches.
Well, I don't think she's showing up at the 6th anniversary next week, but Kyle and Hologram are, after it is set, title versus streak next week.
Title versus streak, yeah. This seems like it would be a good time to end Hologram's streak, and I also think with the showing of that clone teaser, I imagine this would be when they make the debut, and we basically transition from this streak over, or him losing the streak, to, you know, building this new feud for Hologram and his clone. So feels like an appropriate way to, you know, really push Hologram up to maybe like a being into a more of a Dynamite mainstay, perhaps.
Yeah, I hope they get something big out of this. Like, this, you've basically built this streak up over a year, and They've never made too big of a deal out of this streak.
Yeah.
And the most attention it's going to get is when your teasing is going to end next week. So hopefully it's a good angle for Hologram, at least, who should have some kind of spotlight for this match next week.
Yeah, and Klon is heavily rumored to be played by Ares. So we shall see if that plays out next week.
Renee interviewed Mina Shirakawa. She hasn't heard from Toni Storm since Saturday. It seems everyone's just leaving after Saturday. They're all disappearing.
Well, yeah. You know, they work very hard.
Maybe some of them didn't get back into the country.
Maybe.
She fights for Toni. She fights for Mina. And tonight, she fights for the championship. Okay. So Jack Perry promo with Luchasaurus, that life is fragile. We had old clips of Jurassic Express, the two winning the tag belts, and asking, can we pick ourselves up to ride again? And you're going to have to wait a week as Jurassic Express returns on Dynamite next Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Look at that guy. He was so happy in the front row.
They seem, at least these videos seem to be teasing a more, like, mature version of Jurassic Express. Like so, these, I believe, were at least some of them were like horror quotes. Like some of them were like from H.P. Lovecraft. So it seems like they might be retaining some of the darkness of their singles personas. But
just
I'm not.
No AI promos. Okay, that's all I ask.
AI promos. What do you mean?
Where
like AI written promos?
Like that that post we had about the Aleister Black promo.
I wonder if Aleister Black uses AI to write some of his promos.
I mean, when I read that,
feel that way at this point.
That example, I was like, I can't be too far off. Like, how do you come up with some of this stuff?
So if Jurassic Express are going to maybe present like a darker or at least more mature version of themselves, I guess I do wonder how they're going to do that while walking out to Baltimore, because that would pose a bit of a challenge, I think.
Maybe they'll get a remix of it.
Yeah.
Maybe
like a Negative Harmony version of that song.
Possible. Yeah. Maybe Luchasaurus will start to he'll start to humanize himself.
Hmm. Maybe. Mm-hmm.
Hobbs and Claudio. Hobbs just charges at him, and we just had our kind of big man meat match. Hobbs does these nonstop strikes, and then he does the scoop slam after scoop slam that he was doing on the tailgate brawl on Saturday. He misses Claudio going into the steps, and Claudio lifts and drops this guy on top of the barricade and then does it a second time, which, dude, Hobbs is a really big guy to just get up for this. Come back from the break, and Claudio hits a gut-wrench suplex, a superplex, and then the neutralizer gets stopped, and it's Hobbs pulling down the straps when all of a sudden Pac shows up. I've got to say, Pac, with the combination of Pac with the short hair and the t-shirt, this guy looks like just a fan has run out of the crowd.
Did you hear Davey and Braden talk about their live reaction to him? They No. couldn't figure out who this was. They were wondering if it was like some actor or something like that, you know? Like, yeah.
It's like, he looks very different, and maybe it's more so the shirt than it is the hair when you pointed that out. But, dude, he looks so generic.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if that's by design, because like, it's the Death Riders thing to just wear a plain t-shirt, isn't it? And but in his case, he just, I mean, without the hair, he just looks that much more unrecognizable. And he just kind of looks like a short man, you know, whereas with like without the shirt, he looks like a, you know, like a, you know, like a Michelin man. So, yeah, I mean, I wonder if this is going to stick too much.
Well, with Hobbs distracted by the fan, Claudio capitalizes and goes to cradle him, catching Hobbs in 11 minutes and 30 seconds. Joe chases Pac off. Could have got security to chase this guy off and probably arrest him. Hobbs sends Claudio to the floor when Danny Garcia and Yuta storm the ring. So it's 4-on-2. Hangman comes out to assist the ops and clears the ring. And we will get a 6-man tag next week involving the Death Riders against Joe, Hobbs, and Hangman, the stand-in op.
Yeah. The match didn't do a whole lot for me, honestly. Like, they were trying to do a meat-style match, which I think, you know, like, usually works. It usually means a lot of brawling, but I didn't think there was anything, like, impactful enough that left any sort of impression. And I don't know if it was just because it was a bit later in the show or just the fact that, like, neither character, like, even though Hobbs and Claudio are beloved, I wouldn't necessarily say either are that hot. They're sort of like the sort of lesser known members of their respective groups. So it didn't really capture my interest personally.
Yeah. I mean, there was nothing special about the match, but it was like, it was nothing wrong. It was just, yeah, it was like a big man match that by the end, I was kind of just put off by the finish. I just thought it was a little just hokey for just getting out of this match and just doing the simple distraction cradle. And then T-Bird has an announcement to make, as Excalibur has dubbed him. Tony Khan announces the creation of the women's tag team titles with Renee revealing the belts that Tony pulled up from his stash of belts. And that was it. Like, no announcement of like a tournament or teams, nothing. It was just, here are these beautiful belts and some team will win these, date to be determined.
Oh, you got to stay tuned for the next important announcement.
I was like, I think we could have used a little bit more than just here's some more belts. I mean, I wanted something.
Especially with these belts, because this was pretty amusing, at least to me. I don't know if you read the same, John, because like Renee makes a big deal out of this unveil. And then, like, the audience is anticipating it. Really, I think a lot of us have been anticipating it since the announcement of the announcement. So then she pulls the curtain, and it's basically, it's exactly the men's championship design, which, let's be honest, has never been the most well-loved design of AEW's roster. I think it's probably their weakest-looking championship belt. I know you're not really one for, like, belt designs, John, but, like, I do think this was an opportunity to, first of all, do something different, and also to maybe fix, you know, the problem with the very basic-looking men's tag team championships. And instead, they just opted for a smaller version of the men's championship, which they haven't done for any of their other belts. Like, the TBS title... Does the TBS title look like the TNT? No, they look different, don't they?
I mean, they've got, like, the logo on of each network on.
No, I mean just the belt design itself. Anyway, certainly the men's championship and the women's championship don't look too similar. The TBS and TNT do look pretty similar, actually. So I suppose maybe that's one thing. But I don't know. I never liked these tag team championships. And I thought the reaction that this received live was very flat. And just some quick scrolling online, I feel like, reflects that sentiment as well. So... Not a big fan of the new design.
Yeah, I'm more so curious about, like, how big is this tournament going to be? And, like, is it going to put more of a focus on the fact, like, there are very clearly some kind of limitations here on, like, how many women's matches they can put on these shows. Like, it just seems like you're getting your one match that are on these shows. Like, how many matches can you do in a tournament? Is this just going to be... 8 teams and you, I don't know. We'll see. But
well, they can at least fit in one of the tournament match per show or two. I mean, do we know that there's an actual rule, or is it just Tony's preference during his time, right?
I think you can see quite a difference between the amount of matches that you see, like, in Ring of Honor, for instance, versus these shows where it's like, it's very, very rare you have two women's matches ever show up on these shows.
Yeah. Personally, I mean, I think, number one, it might be Tony's preference. Number two, I think it comes down to a level of star power. And the fact is, you have a lot more stars in your men's divisions than you do in the women's divisions. That is changing. And that, I think, will continue to change with these tag team championships as well. So,
do you think we'll have champions by WrestleDream? Do you think we'll have, like, the finals, for instance, by WrestleDream?
That's in
three and a half weeks until the pay-per-view.
Feels kind of early.
That seems cutting it close.
Yeah.
Like, you got to start this tournament this week if you were wanting to aim it for that, unless you're just going to, like, just pile on these matches over the next few weeks. Or however, like, we don't know anything. We don't know if it's going to be a four-team tournament for all we know. Like, it's, I hope it's a lot more than that. Like, there are a lot of women on this roster. I don't think people realize how many women they have under contract that this could give some freshness to some people that have been forgotten about, like your Deonna Purrazzo's, for instance, and to showcase some people. Like, Riho in a team would probably be a great fit for her at this stage of her AEW run, rather than just, you know, being your singles challenger of the month and then disappearing. There's a lot that could be done here, but at the end of the day, it's still 4 hours of TV you have every week, and it's always trying to cram in all this talent into shows, and now you're introducing, like, this tag division, how you are going to balance all of that.
Yeah. But unlike, I would say, a lot of the men's championships that continue, or at least at one time were seemingly, like, endlessly being introduced, I feel like this is one that actually feels very necessary, you know, because, again, you have a lot of women on the roster and a lot of them that are really gaining a lot of popularity. And this, to me, represents, like, the best sort of device to be able to give them that showcase on a show.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we're going back to November of 1995 as Rewind Away takes a look at the Survivor Series featuring Diesel defending the WWF Championship against Bret Hart. We'll also have weekly editions of Collision Course with the carousel of co-hosts joining Kate from Montreal, reviews of TNA Victory Road, New Japan's Destruction in Kobe, and it is the Ask Away Mailbag Show as John and Wei answer your questions all this month at postwrestlingcafe.com. And then, so announced for Collision on Saturday night, Huntington, West Virginia. It's Eddie Kingston and Hook against Big Bill and Brian Keith. The Acclaimed taking on Blake Christian and Lee Johnson. Kyle Fletcher against the returning Commander in a open challenge for the TNT title, which could be a really excellent match. And next week's sixth anniversary show, it is title versus streak with Fletcher and Hologram. Hangman Page, Joe and Hobbs against Moxley, Claudio and Daniel Garcia, and Jurassic Express returns.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have it. Main event, Chris Statlander, Mina Shirakawa for the women's title. Taz issues a correction. Earlier, he was talking about the big names that came from Pittsburgh and mentioned Bruno Sammartino and Larry Zbysko, and he failed to mention Kurt Angle. So he wants to correct the record. Kurt Angle is also from Pittsburgh.
Had his first win in the WWE over Kurt, didn't he?
That is right. Yes, he did.
Debuted against him.
And I guess maybe Kurt texted him, said, what the hell?
What about Britt Baker? Didn't mention
slipped
her.
Slipped his mind.
Interesting.
Mentioned Lee Moriarty being from Pittsburgh, but yeah, didn't mention Britt Baker. Yuta comes out as usual, having words of advice for Statlander, and then Shirakawa goes after the knees, which allowed the announcers to talk about the both knees being replaced by Statlander. Mina went for this Rana counter, couldn't quite get her legs around Statlander, and then tried for the glamorous driver, which is countered. Chris tries for the Wednesday Night Fever, it gets countered, and spins her into a Michinoku driver. But Mina responds, a pair of big dragon screws, and then a sling blade off the top, does a victory roll into the figure four on the weakened knee. Chris makes it to the rope, and then Mina hits her with this insane-looking spinning back fist. Looked like she just clocked her. And Chris stops the figure four with a kick and catches her with the seatbelt to retain the title, this being the third match she has now won with the seatbelt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good match, I thought.
I like this match. I thought it worked. It was, you know, you were putting this in a big spot in the main event. I liked the story with the knee, and I thought Mina Shirakawa worked very hard here. And, you know, it was just your chance to kind of establish Statlander with this title as well. Mm-hmm. But more so, this was for the angle at the end of the show. As Yuta comes in, as does Harley Cameron, congratulating Statlander, and then all of the Death Riders appear, including Moxley and Shafir. Yuta hugs Statlander, appearing to join the group as Harley is looking concerned in the corner. But then Statlander, after milking it, clotheslines Yuta, walks up to Moxley and gives him the middle fingers, and runs off as Shafir tries to chase her as Chris and Harley Cameron go up the stairs in the crowd. And that leads to Darby Allin proceeding out with a flamethrower and pointing it in the direction of John Moxley, who stumbles over the steps like we were in a horror movie. Darby says, I will never quit, and challenges John Moxley to an I Quit match at WrestleDream. So Tony Khan, in his booking finest, has quickly announced Statlander and Darby will face Yuta and Shafir next Wednesday in a mixed tornado match.
I think that's pretty ridiculous. I mean, listen, like, this was a Dynamite where he didn't announce much. And I do think it's important to announce certain matches, like as many matches as you can prior. But this makes no sense. You know, it makes no sense how, like, in 2 seconds he'd be able to make the match.
Do talents have to in storyline, do they have to verbally accept these matches, or are they just under the like the monarchy of Tony Khan that he just gets to determine who you wrestle and when?
I mean, I think it's on a case-by-case basis, but really, I think if Tony books you in the match, I think you're just in it. But to somehow have the match made, and also for the graphic to be made in, like, one minute of, like, not even 1 minute of this guy's, like, you know, entrance.
It's just a template and some renders way. This is no problem.
Yeah, I guess AI would make anything possible very quickly. But I just think, I don't know, it could be seen as a nitpick. I just think it to me, breaks my immersion just a little bit. But
well, you're allowed to nitpick, but people love when I nitpick. And my big issue here was, like, listen, don't get me wrong, I loved that coffin match on Saturday. I thought the match was fantastic, but the angle backstage, to me, it was just too over the top. And after watching tonight, I have no earthly idea why that was done. There was no reference to it. There was no selling of it by Moxley. There was no burns that he had survived. There was absolutely no reason in hell why you needed to do that angle on Saturday. You could have done exactly as the match went down, and this was the first time you see Darby since he's emerged from the coffin, and he's even further lost his mind.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, as I suspected, I felt like, I mean, some of us were wondering, oh, is Mox going to go away for a bit? I feel like I recognized from the moment on that this was just Darby Allin wanting to come up with a cool visual, you know, to close the match and or to close the show and or his portion of the show. And I do think it's a little too much because
if anything, you could have done tonight like where Darby pleads for the rematch and Moxley turns him down and Darby's got to do something so diabolical to get this match. Like, I'm not even saying I would have loved it then, but at least there would have been a reason and it gets you to this I quit match that you've done something so horrendous to John Moxley that you're forcing him to agree to this match. And now you've got to take this to the next level and force him to quit by doing something diabolical.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I thought that it was totally unnecessary. I also don't love the matchmaking here. I mean, I think a coffin match suggests some level of finality to it, or at least traditionally, it signals some sort of finality. You're putting somebody in a coffin. You might be burying them, you might not be, but it just like it feels like it's a big final thing. To go from that to a rather like sort of pedestrian like. Gimmick match like an I quit match feels like a bit of a step back, if not just, you know, not something that necessarily elevates the feud. And I thought the way that they did it here with just like Darby coming out and announcing it didn't make it feel as big or as built up to or as necessary as I think it could have been. So I didn't love that. I also didn't love that it just seemed to undercut like the weight of Statlander turning down the Death Riders, which by the end of this show, I don't know, man. Like, they spent a lot of time building up this, like, Statlander story with the Death Riders. And I thought this payoff, even though it was just a swerve, just didn't really feel like my time invested in it all was worthwhile. You know, this wasn't... Like, I was a lot more excited to see what she would be like with the Death Riders. But to just have it all turn out to be some sort of, like, swerve just kind of gets her back into, like, a level that doesn't really elevate her, in my opinion.
Yeah, as a show coming off, I mean, granted, they have, you know, three and a half weeks until this pay-per-view, but I like the fact at least by the end of the show, we had one direction for WrestleDream, because up until that point, that was my criticism on the show, is that I could go up and down, and I don't know where any of these people are getting set. Like, there were no teases for Hangman. Like FTR with Cage and Christian doesn't feel, or Cage and Copeland doesn't feel like that's something that's they're running back anytime soon. Like, all of your main players, you weren't left with the show of, okay, they haven't announced this, but I can see where this is building towards. So you at least got one thing at the end, but I didn't think this was the greatest follow-up to what was a pretty spectacular show on Saturday. And it felt like one that, it sort of just felt like a kind of self-contained wrestling show. And the stuff that was done booking wise is for stuff further down the road, like this MJF deal, Cage and Copeland, like stuff that is probably not going to set up your next pay-per-view. It's stuff for further down the road.
I agree. I would suspect that this could have been a show that might have been put together very late into the game, and because of all the obligations, I think, of booking for such a big show under great pressure, you know, on the Saturday. I mean, I could see that being a possibility. The fact that nothing was announced really prior to this morning could have also made it a possibility, but this also felt like a show.
And who knows, like, we heard about the Shibata story, like, who knows, like, coming out of these pay-per-views, who's available as well coming out of it. Like, you watch these shows, like, there's that toll that you kind of have to assume that there's that aspect to it as well.
Yeah, there were a lot of, like, just kind of connections on the show that I felt were kind of forced, namely, like, you know, Willow just kind of coming in, stepping in as some sort of, like, Willow and Jetspeed stepping in as a surrogate for Cage and Copeland. Like, Paige coming in with the ops, which, I mean, I'm sure had some reference, but in my mind, it just, like, doesn't feel like that big of a thing. But, you know, again...
And I'll also add, like, this anniversary show next week, like, it doesn't feel like any other edition of Dynamite. Like, it just feels like the weekly show.
Yeah. Like, this is, I think, a show... I mean, there are exceptions, you know, where, like, you get the sense they're building really to long-term stories, like in the case of Moxley and this Chris Statlander thing. But, yeah, other times maybe it's more of a, you know, again, maybe more of a week-to-week type of build.
Well, we will hear from our forum and see what they had to say about the follow-up Dynamite to All Out. We are going to be out momentarily here on the YouTube stream. But, hey... Subscribe to the channel. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night. We will be dropping Book Club on Thursday for our Double Double and Espresso members at postwrestlingcafe.com. Neil Flanagan and I sitting down to chat Hitman by Bret Hart, his 2007 autobiography, one of the better wrestling books that I think has been put out, because the man, you would not believe, but spares very few punches in this book, and he's got audio diaries to lean on throughout his entire career. I could only imagine him listening back to himself over his entire career, reliving all
of this. I could imagine it too. Yeah.
So that's coming out on Thursday. Ways with Neil Flanagan on Friday night for Rewind to SmackDown. And then going into the weekend, I'll have a show covering Victory Road. We'll have Collision Course and Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson reviewing Destruction in Kobe this weekend. Will Ren Narita realize his dream and become the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion, unseating Zack Sabre Jr.?
Anything's possible.
But not that. All right. We are now going to head to forum.postwrestling.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.